The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to my program. It is always a joy to be here with you. I've got pastoral counselor Jeff McLaughlin on the line today. Jeff, welcome back, my friend.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me. It's always good to be here and looking forward to the show today for sure.
Well, you know, I've asked Jeff to consider what basically would be a surmisal of all of the world's ills. And we figured that in this next hour, Jeff, you should be able to handle that with no problems at all, right?
I'm going to try and do it with one arm tied behind my back, too. We'll see if that goes, all right?
Oh, my goodness. You know, we're laughing about it, and we have to laugh about it, because if we didn't laugh about it, I'm pretty sure I'd be crying about it. There are things that are going on right now, Jeff, that are just inexplicable. They are heartbreaking, really heartbreaking. When you look at the condition, and first of all, if you just think about what's happened to our nation from the health front this year, 2020, it's going to be known as the year of COVID. It's going to be, but now it's going to be known for so many more things than just COVID. It's almost like we've got a whirlwind of problems up upon us. But yet, as a believer, and that's what we're going to focus on today, the fact that we as believers, we have hope. And it makes me wonder, Jeff, I don't know what you think about this, but how in the world do people who are not believers, how are they coping right now?
It's a chaotic world, isn't it? I mean, it's a lot of nonsense and messes and craziness and all that stuff going on right now. So no, I don't know the answer for that. I don't have a good answer for that one, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, I know that as a way of starting for our listeners that may not know or may not have heard you on the program, give us the little short bio on yourself, what you do, where you are.
Sure. So I work, I coach marriages mainly, and then do some media work on the side, do some podcasting and things like that. But yeah, my heart and passion is marriages for sure. And my wife and I just celebrated 18 years ourselves. And so that's, you know, I don't know what anniversary that is, if that's a big one or not, but you know, it's kind of a cool sounding number. But we worked in youth ministry for a number of years. And really just over the last 10 years or so, you know, found a passion for working with families. There's a lot of hurt and a lot of pain out there, and just a lot of people who are just sort of going through the motions and don't have vision for their marriages. And I don't know, man, my heart is just, you know, I always tell couples, I said, I have such an optimistic heart for any couple. I don't care what state they're in. And I don't necessarily have that when I walk outside the door and I look at the world. It's just so weird. So I feel like that's that unique segment of life that I get to do that, you know, I have a lot of grace for and a lot of passion for.
It's wonderful. And you do this in a practice that was at one point still based out of First Baptist, I believe.
Yeah. I work mainly with First Baptist Orlando and work with couples there. And, you know, we have a good, probably the lion's share of our work probably comes from internally. And then, you know, lots that come externally. And as I mentioned before, we, you know, do some podcasting work. So we're in the world of PTSD a little bit and trauma. And so we get quite a few people that actually reach out even nationally, and we get to work with and do some coaching and that sort of thing. So it's fun. It's, you know, never short of interesting stories and very fascinating people. And we all have a story, don't we, Mike?
We do. Everyone has a story, and I think it's unique to them. And yet we know that our stories all spill over onto other issues. And that's why I've asked Jeff, who I've just in my one meeting with you, Jeff, you struck me as a person that you have a great heart. You have a biblical worldview from the standpoint of desiring to see the kingdom of God come into the people that you have an opportunity to talk with. And that's wonderful. And, you know, just to have a source of a voice, an ear, if I could say that, because a lot of what a coach does in these days, and what a pastoral counselor, that's what you do a lot of as well, pastoral counseling, which is a lot different than what secular mind may have about counseling. There would be some overspill in that too, run over, but We come from pastoral counselors, come from a different perspective, and that is a biblical perspective. And you know, Jeff, when I think about this, we want to always make sure that our advice that we're giving, I don't care whether this is a plumber telling a person, whether it's a salesperson at Home Depot who is telling a customer, we'd like to think that our customers, our friends, the people that come to us for advice, that we're giving them something that is right, something that is true, something that is helpful. And I can't think of any business that would ever make it if they were giving them a line, if they were giving them something that's false. That would be horrible. Yeah. It's antithesis. But yet, here's the truth, Jeff, and see if you, I know you'll agree with this. I don't even have to ask that question. There is no other way to know what is good or true if you don't know God. Would you not agree with that?
It's hard to disagree with that one, Mike.
Well, here's what Philippians, Paul wrote Philippians, and he said this in chapter 4, verse 8. We were talking about this with a group from our Mark Media, the owners of our radio station, a few moments ago, and we were talking about Philippians 4, 8. And listen to this. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Wow, that's pretty powerful. I think succinct, and as one of the group members said today, gives us a checklist, if you will, a tick box, as they would say in England. If we could have a list of things that we'd say, okay, if I've got this marked off, I'm going to be in pretty good standing. That list is pretty conclusive, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's funny, if I could comment on that real quick too. It's almost like the exact opposite of what, you know, I know it's in vogue to sort of, you know, take a shot at media or mainstream media. And I don't think it's just mainstream media, you know, Mike, because of the internet, you know, you have YouTubers out there that are even as prolific as, you know, and well-known, widespread as some mainstream. And it almost seems like what you just read is almost the exact opposite of what is practiced by and large in those, you know, in those forums, in those arenas. And that's where people are getting their news. It's where people are getting their inspiration, unfortunately. You know, they're consuming it constantly. And, you know, I think of these times, these unprecedented times that we're in, and the fear and the steady diet of fear and guilt, you know, that people are, the fear of what's the unknown, the virus, you know, possibly losing jobs, et cetera. But then the guilt of, you know, almost walking away from those things going, well, I'm not doing enough and I'm not getting enough done. My kids are, you know, displaced, they're missing out on things, all this stuff. And I think that people are just eating that up, and it's the exact opposite of what you read.
You know, it is, I go back so often, it is so true that people who come from a different worldview, who come from a different, let's say, a different list of beliefs, and what you said a while ago is so true, that those people are actually not only living their lives, but they're leading out in the media in a way that seems so contra to this list. It seems so foreign to anything that we know of God. And again, if you take the definition of something that is right, and if you make something wrong and you call it right, it may work for your show, it may work for your audience in terms of ears that are hearing what you say, but it doesn't work in essence. It doesn't work in actuality, because you can't take something false and make it true.
And we almost celebrate that, don't we? I mean, these days, I'm not us, but I'm saying society almost celebrates like doing that very thing. And it's unreal to me to see that because it sells, you know, and it's you know, people, like you see that being rewarded right now. I think that's the hardest part in all of this, is you see bad things and misinformation and false hope or whatever, you know, or fear, whatever, you know, all of those things almost being rewarded. And, That's the struggle, you know, for me. When I look at the world, I go, man, that's where we're so off base right now in so many ways.
It is true. We are off base. And what I'm praying that God will help us to at least start a conversation today that maybe our listeners will hear and carry it on with their family, carry it on with their friends, to say, hey, what do you think about this? So let's take number one. I'm going to have you put your coach hat on here, your pastoral counseling hat. And if people are sitting in your room, in your office, and they ask you a question, how am I to live in the year of COVID with all of the impacts? What number one have you found yourself saying that is helpful to people who are dealing with the throes of a pandemic that they've never experienced before?
Such a great question. You know, it's funny. I don't know that I've been asked directly the question about how to live generally during this time. I've been asked it in the marriage context. And what we're seeing a lot is, and we really kind of coined this phrase. I didn't coin this phrase. Somebody has coined this phrase. It's kind of circulated around there, but we're calling this COVID fatigue. And, you know, folks that are, let's just talk marriages, for example, marriages and families that are in unique struggles right now where, you know, someone's furloughed, they're home from work, they're working from home, and everybody's in close quarters and all of different things. For our family, we're kind of used to that. We're a big family. That's not a big deal at all. But for a lot of families, it's a real struggle. And, you know, there's a lot of, there can be fear, there can be guilt, there can be shame attached to that, all of these different things. And I kind of tell them, I said, look, I mean, at some point we have to step back and sort of get that 30,000 foot view. And just consider the time that we're in right now. These are unique times. It's just a very interesting, you know, world. I mean, Mike, you and I can't even go to the grocery store right now without putting on a mask, right? And, you know, and I'm kind of one of these, I don't, you know, I feel like, I know we're going to get into this later, but like even that whole idea has become sort of a politicized subject. Like if you're a mask wearer, you're in one party. If you're not, you're in another, it seems. And it sorts, I wear a mask if I'm told to, that's fine. But man, when you can ride a bicycle down the street on a trail and you have people that step 30 feet off the trail, you know, because you're not wearing a mask or something, like that's not normal. This is different. These are different times. And so all of these different experiences that we're seeing and, you know, feeling, and that's not to disparage anybody. I think that some people have a real, just legitimate fear, a different kind of fear that they're kind of dealing with. And, you know, if we can't step back and acknowledge that the last several months that we have lived in has not been, you know, for many of us in our own generations, you know, the most unique, weird, awkward, I mean, choose your adjective here, time, then, you know, I don't know how you can give yourselves, you know, grace as a result of that. So for me, it's easy. I look at it, and I go, yeah, of course, there better be some grace right now. This is crazy. We weren't meant to live like this, right? We weren't meant to live locked down. We weren't meant to live, you know, wearing masks all the time, but we're having to do that right now. You know, and that's gonna have an effect on things for sure. It's going to change things. That's one of the things I tell couples, you know, specifically. And I think that applies to life in general. You know, if you're just beating yourself up, man, like step back, breathe, right? Try to reclaim any kind of sense of normalcy that you can, you know, right now. If that means going out to a to a nature spot or something where it's, you know, it's sort of escaped the whole COVID, you know, thing. We did a road trip this summer as a family. We were out west in Montana and Wyoming and seeing some of the national parks there, and it felt strangely normal, right? Not everybody can do that. I understand that. But, you know, for those who can find a place in their own state or somewhere nearby to do something like that, even for a few hours, I think that's so important just to kind of remember what life was like, you know, before, and then hold to the idea that at some point we'll get through this. Okay. I think God made us with an incredible resilience, and all throughout history, we've had major challenges, and you know, with his help, we get through it, and we will get through it. And so, I think that people that are experiencing that sort of fatigue just have to, you know, not punish themselves so much, because you know what happens, Mike? When we punish ourselves, we punish someone else too, mm-hmm. right? And we're usually punishing them for something that we see in ourselves. And I tell you, it's very fun to be able to say to couples, "Hey, you're not alone right now. You think you're the only ones going through all of this, and that's not to minimize your struggle, but give yourself some grace. Okay, it's okay to not be okay right now. That's okay." So that's kind of where I'm at.
I like the word fatigue, the COVID fatigue, because it is really true. We're tired of it, and it wears on us. And just yesterday, Jeff, I heard my wife was telling me she's on a visit to talk about marriage anniversary. She's up right now with her parents, visiting them on their 65th wedding anniversary.
So, nice. Oh, awesome. That's
what a milestone that is. But in the process, this is up in Kentucky, and went to a Sam's store, I believe it was, and they, once again, almost the entire area of paper goods is bare. And there's apparently now a new run because of concern over A, possibly the resurgence of COVID cases, B, some of the comments that have been made about potential impending lockdowns again. Yeah. Now that we could be experiencing that kind of a scenario again. And so all of that wears down on us. We are starting to be fatigued as a nation. And one of the difficult things that I think fatigue us most is it's like, who do you listen to? Who has truth? Does Dr. Fauci have the truth? You know, would the rest of these on the COVID task force be telling us? You know, so what is truth? I mean, Pilate asked that of Jesus. I think it needs to be asked today. What is truth? Yeah. Where is truth?
You know, Mike, you had Dr. Ben Rawl on your show not long ago.
Yes.
I have the fortunate privilege of getting to do his podcast with him. And, you know, Ben's a different sort for sure. I mean, he's definitely firm in his convictions on things. And I learn a lot from him all the time. I don't know that I'm, you know, we certainly have our disagreements from time to time and friendly ones. And that makes for good, you know, I guess good quality podcasting, you know, where we're able to sort of kind of banter a little bit there. And, you know, but I have to say something. I've just seen so much. I've learned so much from him right now during these times in terms of like sort of overcoming that fear and him just pointing out, you know, where the contradictions have been. I think one of the things for many of us is that because the news is so, I mean, it's so nonstop. It's so like there's so much information out there. I mean, we cannot possibly process, you know, a tiny fraction of all of the news stories and all of the stimuli that's coming at us all the time. And I think that one of the things we tend to do is we also forget. And so, you know, we forget that, I don't know, you know, 6-7 months ago, they were saying that, you know, masks don't work and now they do and this, that, and the other thing. And again, I don't want to make this about that. I like I said, I wear my mask, but you know, at the end of the day, I think we're dealing with human beings that are also learning a whole lot about all of we're experiencing right now, even the experts, right? And at some point, you know, if we as people put our full faith and trust in any one of these people, they're going to let us down and they're going to show their own contradictions and things like that. And so I think we have to kind of, you know, hold some of these opinions out there with it with an open hand. And, you know, I think, you know, you talked about finding truth or whatever. I just believe that, you know, God gave us a brain for a reason and the ability to reason and to think. I love, you know, Isaiah talks about come let us reason, you know, together. And that can be a dangerous thing. I think if people are not careful and they don't use wisdom and discernment and sort of cipher through some of the sources that are out there. But I also think that people are a lot more capable of doing critical thinking than they give themselves credit for. And so sometimes they sort of shut off their brain and they just say, well, I you know, I guess I'm not capable of knowing anything. And look, I don't want to have any disrespect for a medical degree or whatever, but you know, as a ordained pastor that has a seminary degree and spent lots of hours, as you did as well, you know, learning biblical languages and theology and things like that. Like, I don't think I have a whole lot of superior knowledge than most people. I always joke that I came out of seminary knowing less about anything than ever. And I think that people need to not lean on their own understanding, but lean on the fact that God's given them the ability to reason. And if they'll sort of engage that process, they can arrive at some pretty good truth themselves that may spare them a lot of confusion and heartache, you know, that would come otherwise via the always changing news dialogues and monologues and things like that that are out there.
You know, we have hope, and it is it's so true that people are speaking these things, and we hear these things that are in the news. And I don't want to put any disparaging comments out about any of the individuals who are experts, supposedly experts, but we do have to go back to that source that, as pastors, you're talking about that we have found. That I believe it goes way beyond now in the context of our talk today, pastors. I think this is something that our country was founded upon, an understanding that God is God, and that a Judeo-Christian ethic and an understanding of the God of the Bible is the one nation under God that we're talking about. It wasn't just the humanist understanding of that or what we're hearing about today in the news. And I have to just go back and realize that what I learned in a secular college years and years ago, having to do with broadcasting, that one day we would see news that would not report the news, but that news that would massage the news. So, and I think we're seeing that today, and I think we got to be careful. And we have to go back to an understanding of that does come from the Bible, that only the Bible, only God is the source of good. Only God is the source of true hope. And if we put our hope in something else, it might be like the sand in that little parable about the person that builds their house upon the sand. And when the storm comes, it gets easily washed away. Here's a verse to end this segment with. Listen to this one. But in your hearts, this is 1 Peter, in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect. I believe, Jeff, we have hope in spite of COVID fatigue, my friend.
Yep.
We can have hope in the Lord, and we just got to not be overbearing about it to people who are like this. But we have to hold on. And that hold on might mean a hold on with a bit of a struggle, might even be a fight, if you will, for what is true in the days to come. Jeff McLaughlin is my guest today. He is a pastoral counselor, a coach at First Baptist, and we'll hear more from Jeff coming up in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We are back with Jeff McLaughlin from the, I guess, what is the name of your business? I should give that. I did not have that written down, but you're a pastoral counselor and coach at First Baptist Orlando. So what would be your title there?
We just like we use our not 501, what is it, whatever we're incorporated under is marriage blueprints. We just love the idea of sort of helping couples kind of design that blueprint, for their marriage. I think that honestly, to get into that just for a second, like Genesis 2 is kind of a marriage blueprint chapter for what marriage is. And so we often start there with couples and just kind of teach them what they're aiming for. So, you know, my wife and I, as we had to think of a name, said, well, that'd be a good one to go with. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, when somebody's looking to find me, they would just go to firstorlandocounseling.com and I'm on there and they can find me and the other folks that work over that center.
That's really an awesome name, Marriage Blueprints. Never heard that one before. That is really cool. That's a good picture, because a blueprint is so very important. Having been a part of church building programs and actually the one that had to be looking at blueprints just about every day, I'll tell you what, you get a new appreciation for the skill and the design and just what goes into the making of a blueprint, because it comes down to fractions of an inch on a blueprint to be accurate. And we found we had a situation in Gainesville where I was helping build, and somebody that laid out some conduit that day made a mistake. Well, the mistake turned out to be a wonderful blessing, because it caused for where the conduit came up that was carrying some of our audio signals. It came up about 3 inches away from where it was supposed to be in a wall. And so now we had to extend the wall out. And I want you to know that little mistake caused a redesign, a simple redesign, but a redesign nonetheless, that ended up being just a wonderful blessing to us. So sometimes even what looks like mistakes in our marriages can turn out to be the most wonderful blessings. That's not always true, but boy, I tell you what, it can happen that way. We were talking in the break about what I mentioned from my college days. A professor, I was taking a course in broadcasting, and this is long before I ever knew, Jeff, I was going to go into ministry. So I thought I was going to be a longtime, all-time broadcaster, and had a course called Broadcast Communications. And we studied a guy by the name of Marshall McLuhan, and he was basically a bit of a... he was, if I could coin the term, media prophet. That's kind of what he was. He would have been a guy that would have been an evaluator of our culture. And he wrote this book, as I recall, called The Medium is the Message. Only it was a play on the words, and it was spelled like massage. The medium is the massage. And so it was two words being used interchangeably there. The medium is the massage. It's the message, but no, it's the massage. And what his thinking was, and what the gist of the study was, is that one day he saw that media would become so powerful in people's minds that we wouldn't just do the Uncle Walter Cronkite thing, which is what we did back in the day. Everyone would tune in to CBS News and watch Walter Cronkite is, he says, that's the way it is. And, you know, that was his, that's the way his sign off was. And people loved Uncle Walter, they called him. He became kind of engrafted into people's lives every day as almost like a family member that you would consult to find out what went on in the day before. And people, I think, by and large, trusted Walter Cronkite and people like him. And so the media, though, even in the day of Walter Cronkite, McLuhan saw a day that was very dangerous, a day in which people would now not be able to consult the media for the news. But what would happen when we would consult the news, we would actually be assaulted by the news, assaulted with a narrative. And he would have been the first person that I can remember that ever would have used a word like a narrative, like a game plan that the media would use to begin to shape what people thought about the news, that would begin to actually shape what people end up thinking as a result of hearing the news. And so it was a mind blowing, eye opening class, to tell you the truth. And I have to say that I really had a hard time believing a lot of it at the time, that it could ever be that way. Yeah. That you know, because such was, I believe, our thought and our trust in America's the values. We're, after all, one nation under God. We would never do that, right? This is America. This is not Russia. This is not Cuba. This is America. And I'm having a harder time right now in a lot of situations seeing such a clear difference right now. It's sad. Yeah. It really is sad.
Is it, I mean, I don't know if it's crazy to say, but I mean, I when you talk about like the Uncle Walter phenomenon and everything, I'm going, man, that sounds really good. Can we go back to that? You know, like, I got to tell you, it's so interesting. We've got friends that live seasonally down here that are just dear friends, and they have girls that are about my girl's age, but they live in Ontario full time. And we've gone and stayed with them before. And I remember one of the first times that they came down here, they said, you know, it's so crazy to see how different your news is. Now, they get some of the cable channels and things like that up there. They're you know, right near the Toronto area. And so they're obviously, you know, not too far from from real world and, you know, America world, I should say. And they get, you know, but they also have their local news, which is so different. And I remember being up there and seeing how different it is covered. And I suspect it was a lot more like that sort of Walter Cronkite kind of idea. You know, they just said, man, everything you guys have down here is all sensationalized and all this stuff. And I said, yeah, and I know that because I feel like I sort of analyze that all the time, but I think the vast majority of people wouldn't even know that that's a problem, or wouldn't even know that, you know, there was a time where it wasn't like that. We've just come to accept that as completely normal now.
It's so true. And back then, our instructor in that class, this was a very helpful course in more ways than one, but our professor of the class, he brought along McLuhan's teaching, and he gave an illustration that was out of his own conviction, and I think it's true. He said, if we could somehow train a gorilla to read the news every day, he said, it might be odd in the beginning, he said, but I have a feeling that over time, people would begin to trust the gorilla.
Wow. Wow.
Because the gorilla becomes just a part of their everyday life.
Yeah.
And we're hearing the same words coming from a gorilla. And you know, it is a sad telling status for America that we are right now hearing something. We're hearing it every day. We're hearing the same thing every day, but we're not hearing the truth every day. Mm-hmm. We're hearing things that go along with a narrative. And now it's come out, maybe more so than ever before, there's a lot that we're not hearing. And the reason we're not hearing that is because what that is contrary to the narrative that is wanted to be out there. So you have big tech. We have now the mainstream media. Boy, no one's talking about collusion among them. But that's what's going on. There are stories that are not being told. Even over the weekend, Jeff, there are stories, big, big national news stories that happened at some of the rallies that certain groups are wanting. And, you know, because it doesn't fit what people are needing to hear, according to these other voices, you're not even seeing those stories on the news.
Yeah.
So you're right.
And, you know, Mike, it's crazy, though, that, you know, when someone says something like you just said right there, and I know that we can take any position to an extreme. But I think what you said was a very good summation and summary of where we are right now. And the problem is there are folks out there, many out there, that would hear you say something like that and go, oh, he's crazy, right? He's talking crazy now. What is he, you know? And I don't know what it would take to kind of open someone's eyes to, you know, to that, because, you know, there's such a powerful bias that I think that people have. And, you know, once they're fed this stuff, then they kind of become, you know, it's the old, selection bias and confirmation bias and stuff that thing, you know, people can fall into, and they filter their news and interpret it through, you know, these sort of existing positions. And it's almost like their minds, no, it's not almost, their minds have been shaped, you know, by those. And I love how you said, by those who decided essentially what the news should be.
Right.
Now, that's a scary thought. You know, call me a hopeless romantic when it comes to this sort of thing. But to me, the news should be the news and facts should be facts. And, you know, people should be, you know, that should be the most truthful institution of any society, you know, should be the news. And I think the idea of the free press was the idea behind that. But we've gotten so far away from that now. And, you know, it's the point where it's, I mean, I don't know any other word other than to call it propaganda.
Well, something that we studied at RTS years ago that was so helpful, a guy by the name of Veith wrote a book called Postmodern Times. And this, too, was one of the more helpful books I've ever read in my life. And he talked about something that I think we're all experiencing right now, and we're seeing it. And he talked about that in a day where postmodernism has now fully taken place, and we are now postmodern. In this day and age, he said, what happens is that people who have a viewpoint that would be, let's say, like ours, that would be a biblical worldview. We come from that Philippians 4 point where Paul talked about whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are right, are lovely, are praiseworthy, are admirable. Think upon those things. And so if you are a person that would be an atheist or a person that would be postmodern, then it's not just any longer, this is something that we learned in that class, it's not any longer something that where you just have a differing viewpoint by them. They don't just look at us and think, well, I disagree with that. Right. They don't look at you because you have a belief in Jesus. They don't look at you as being just different than they would look at you as being a threat. So that's what we have to understand. Believers need to understand that we're treated with such vile thought and actions because we are a threat to them. And they're not just going to sit back and let us go our merry way and have our opinions. That's they're on a war. And I think that's what people are for the first time are seeing, just how serious of a war this is. They're after people who believe in God. And so there is a joint effort, I believe, in the media right now to just really dissuade people from even considering the things that are good, lovely, pure, holy.
To
in any way possible. You know, that is what I believe is happening from a biblical worldview standpoint. We need to have our eyes open. And that means for believers, it means that we have to know what's in the Word.
Yeah. Mike, our pastor at First Baptist Orlando, David Youth, I don't know if this is original, but I've heard him quote this many times, that the news never covers a plane that lands. And there's just no story in that. You know, there's no story in that. It's this sort of tongue-in-cheek way of saying, you know, yes, sensationalize, you know, everything. And I, you know, I love shows like what you're doing. I love some of the stuff that I get to do with some of the podcasts I get to tell. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have the platforms of some of these major, like, national things, you know, but we're able to tell good stories. Right. And let people know that there's good news out there and there are good things happening in the world. And I honestly believe that there are some out there that are so inundated with all of that bad stuff that they've actually come to believe that there's, like, no good stories at all anymore. There's no goodness. There's no whatever. And, you know, I've often said that, you know, hope to me seems like it's a more powerful emotion than even love, though I think I could pick holes in my own analogy on this, but for this reason, at least for the survival of you know, someone's well-being, because when someone runs out of hope, when their last drop of hope runs out, this is where you see things like suicide and some, you know, people taking those ultimate steps and everything. I've seen people live without love, at least for a time, or at least appear to. Okay. It's not a good place to be either, but man, without hope, that's so dangerous. And I feel like the more that, you know, folks are sort of being fed and consuming all of it, it's drowning out any sense of hope of, you know, of any beauty and design and goodness in this world. And it makes them question, okay, where's God in all of this? And where's that? I think that's it's an unfair sort of conclusion that they draw. And it's just one that's reflective of them having been indoctrinated. You know, it's like if you or I just decided to eat candy bars every day, all day long, you know, fried foods or whatever. And we just, man, I feel like all hope is lost. I have no hope to change my cholesterol. And they're like, no, you need to change your diet first, you know, get some good food in you. And then you might see some change there. And I just, you know, people have to realize here's the thing, you know, like we can talk until the cows come home on this one, but there is also a personal responsibility factor that comes into play. And maybe the listener out there has to recognize, you know, I am responsible for allowing those gateways in, you know, for turning on that news program or the talk radio or whatever, you know, that's out there that just keeps feeding me some of this stuff. You know, at the end of the day, like, those are not necessities for life. Okay? We can survive without those things, and people have to be willing and have to have the courage to turn it off for starters, and sort of start to break that addiction, you know. And then I think that's when hope starts to become restored, because hope comes often on the heels of peace, right? And when you have peace and you have rest and you have, you know, just some space in your head to, you know, to not be consumed with all of the insanity, you know, like there's a space where you can just go, I can breathe right now, and it feels good, and life isn't so bad, right? And yeah, we might be in tough times and everything, but there's still good people around me, and I have a purpose and a mission and all that. I mean, to me, it all comes into play that way.
I agree with you. And I love what you talked about on your vacation. You took your family out west, and I saw some of the pictures, by the way, man, that looked like that was a great time together. But I love what you said about kind of like unhooking from life, unhooking from all of the bad news that's there. And that when you take your family and you do something fun like that, it does give you a sense of normal, what that old normal was. And it's a relief. It's a healing time. And I really do believe that we're going to have to unhook our hearts, our lives. Yeah. I believe it is an addiction. I think I think a lot of us are much more addicted than we realize when it comes down to what's going on with our intake, what's going on with how I'm feeling, filling my mind, and how that affects me on a day-to-day basis in my outlook. I think we are much more depressed as a country than we would need to be if we took Peter's words about being ready to give a defense for the hope that we have. And if our eyes and our hearts are on that defense, and what is that defense? Well, our defense is our hope is in the Lord, who's actually sovereign. He's a God who's in control. And things, even though they may look hopeless, if you are a believer, we're never without hope. We're never hopeless.
If I could, I want to jump in there and just add something too. That, you know, one of the things years ago that I had an amazing experience as a youth pastor, and it wasn't dodgeball. I mean, that was always amazing, but it was more than that. It was, and it wasn't a lock-in either. No, we had a guest that came in one time to speak to our little group of kids, you know, 70, 80 kids or whatever we had, or whatever at the time. And it was a guy named Dr. Matthew Sleeth. And Matthew Sleeth wrote a book. I know Serve God, Save the Planet was one of them, but his second book was the more impactful one for me. And it was called 24/6. And I may be fudging credentials here on this. I'm pretty sure that he was an ER director. And I want to say it was at Hopkins, but it doesn't matter. Major hospital in the Northeast. And, you know, he kind of was on a sabbatical trip of his own with his wife. And they were sitting out on the beach one night, and his wife asked him something like, what do you think the biggest problem with the world is? And he said, it's just that the world is dying. Like, and he was reflecting on, you know, seeing cancer diagnoses from, you know, young moms and things like that. You know, people don't work supposed to have, just looking at sort of this decaying world. And that led him eventually to, you know, to really seek out sort of to downsize, to simplify life, but also to reengage with things like Sabbath. And so we brought him in to speak, and I had no idea what he was going to talk about. I just knew I'd read one of his books, and I said, man, he was in town for something, and I was able to get him. So he came in, and he asked this question that I'll never forget. He said, when was the last time that you guys didn't, you know, have all the fancy lights and stereos and all that stuff with your, you know, your big services or whatever, but you just got, you took a trip over, and you laid out under the stars, right? And you just looked, and you contemplated God, you know, as a you know, as a group, and called that your, you know, your service that night or whatever. And I feel like, you know, I'm not going to, it was a long drive, you know, to get out west. It was a road trip for us. So it was a long drive to get out there. And so I'm not going to pretend like every waking moment of that was me doing that. But man, when you step out and you see things, certainly for us who live in Florida, and we don't get seasons here. And so sometimes we miss out on the, we have great beaches and all that good stuff, but theme parks, but we don't see, there are things that we saw on this trip that I cannot describe that just left my family and I going, wow. Right. Wow. Mm. And I think those were those sort of Sabbath moments where it was like, wow, like the world is bigger than whatever's being reported on, you know, on the news right now and these stories. And I think that was, I'd like to think that experience is available to everyone and you don't have to drive halfway across the country to see that. Maybe it's just, you know, getting outside to a somewhat rural place at night and, you know, seeing the stars and just going, okay, all right, this is, I'm a little small speck and life is bigger than all of the noise that I've been consuming or whatever. Like, we've got to get back to that sort of attitude of Sabbath as a lifestyle, right? And not just a quote unquote event or something like that.
Oh my goodness, my mind is rushing right now to the book of the book of Psalms. Listen to this. This goes right along with what you're saying. Psalm 8, verse 3. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place. What is mankind that you are mindful of them? Human beings that you care for them. Wow. What a great question from the psalmist there. That is powerful. So yeah, we can kind of unhook, unwind, and take a look at the stars and say, God, you're greater than I can think or imagine, and you are greater than the problems that are before us right now. And I'm going to go to you, and I know that's not to say that these problems aren't great. That's not to say that we don't have work to do, but it is to say that I can get my mind kind of retooled and reset. I think we all need a reset right now. We can get ourselves recalibrated to be able to know what does need to happen so that we can work rightly. And that is only done by when we get a good, fresh, clear picture of just how great our God is. Jeff McLaughlin is my guest today. We'll be back one more time with Jeff here on Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. I'll be right back. My guest today is Jeff McLaughlin, and Jeff is with me here for just one more segment. We got about 10 minutes left, Jeff. And during the break, you and I were talking about this trip you took out west, and I love what you said about just the impact of seeing some of God's wonderful beauty it had on your children. And you made a comment. I'd like for you to kind of just dig into that a little bit about they're not being on screens at this point. Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, so you're going to open up Pandora's box with this one, Mike. This is a good segment for sure. So we, you know, there's a lot of press right now concerning that subject of screens, because like on, I think it's on Netflix right now, there's a documentary that people are kind of really getting, you know, impacted by called The Social Dilemma. And it's kind of talking about our addiction to tech and screens. It's very well done. I've talked to some of the contributors on it, but long before that, you know, I think my wife and I have always had this sense of, forgive the expression, like sort of a love-hate relationship with things like social media and whatever, because we knew, you know, we're in that generation that's kind of like the transition generation that went from life where you just played outside. And, you know, it's a summer day, even in South Florida where I grew up, and mom kicks you out of the house and says, I don't want to see you until it's dark, right? Get out and go play and that sort of thing. And she didn't have to tell us twice, you know, that was the thing. In fact, the harshest, you know, day would be a day if you got grounded. Oh my gosh, I got to spend an entire day in my room or something. You know, that was just awful. And so, you know, we, having had that frame of reference, we've seen, and don't get me wrong, I love tech. I mean, working in, you know, doing some media stuff, I love some of the things we're, you know, shooting 4K video these days and some of the cool things we're able to do. But at the same time, you know, I see the addiction that brings and, you know, how like a trip like we took, for example, how there's a lot of kids, and we saw this is the crazy thing. We saw families out there that, you know, in the midst of, you know, a beautiful, I was just telling you about in the Grand Teton National Park, there's a beautiful lake called Jenny Lake, very famous lake that's at the base of the main mountains there. And my kids were playing in, having a good old time. They were looking for, there was like quartz rocks, quartz crystals in the sort of the banks of the where this lake was. And so they were looking for that. They were looking for, I forgot what animals they were finding in there. I was about to say amoebas. Those are not, it wasn't amoebas. It was something else. One of the little slugs or whatever the things are. I forgot. And they're catching them. They're having a good old time with them. But there were other kids that we saw on these trips that just, you know, constantly had the phone out. They're on hikes. They're in, you know, these people and the phone is out and they're whatever. And they're playing a game. They're doing whatever. And, you know, we try to keep our kids away from that kind of stuff. We just have this inherent belief that, that creativity gets stifled, you know, from an overuse of that stuff. And so, we, you know, of course, scripture talks about all things in moderation anyway. So there's a good sort of prescription for how we navigate this stuff. But I think that in protecting our kids from that, it enabled them to be able to go out and to be in awe and wonder, similar to what mom and dad were feeling when we were on this trip, you know, going out and looking at places that I'm going, wow, that is gorgeous. It's huge. It's unlike anything I've seen in Florida, you know, all of that. And it was special. It was special for the kids, you know, for our kids to be able to, you know, to see that. I don't want them to ever lose that. In fact, I don't want to ever lose that myself. And so I feel like my wife and I are constantly asking questions, you know, and I really feel like this ties in with the media thing, because that medium of our phones or our screens, that's really where people get their news these days. I mean, I don't know too many people that are really, you know, tuning down, you know, tuning in religiously in front of the TV anymore. A lot of times they're getting it on the go from, you know, a Twitter account or a news website or whatever. And I feel like if we can put that stuff down, you know, we are enabled to go out, whether it's going on a trip out west or just going, you know, a couple miles away from where we live in our own respective cities to an area that has a little bit more of a sanctuary type feeling, you know, and we can appreciate just natural beauty and design and just sort of see a life that's bigger than us. And I don't know. As weird as it sounds, as breathtaking as those things are, I have my breath taken away, but I also feel like I've never had so much breath when I see those as well, if that makes sense. Right. And I'm not trying to wax eloquent here. I just feel that way, that there's this sort of this peace. And I have like that sort of deep breathing reengages that we often don't get when we're moving so fast in the worlds that we live in. So yeah, a lot of thoughts on that, man. It's very fresh in my mind right now, for sure.
Well, screen time is something that we've got to watch. And if you don't think that it impacts you as an adult, if you're listening to us, try this little exercise at dinner time, or go to a restaurant, leave your phone in the car, and find out how many times during that hour that you're in that restaurant, you'll find yourself reaching for your pocket or for your lady, if you keep your phone in the purse. You find out how many times you reach for it. I am telling you, then there's this little internal thing that happens where, like, I'm thinking, oh, I need my phone, because what happens if I'm getting an urgent call? a guy once that I worked with one time used to say, hey, if they've died, they'll be dead in the morning.
Oh my God. It's true. You know, I got to tell you something too. We had an interesting conversation. When I say we, this is actually with Ben Rawl, the aforementioned Ben Rawl. We were talking to Anna Lemke of Stanford University. She's in the psychology department over there and teaches. Just a very sweet, sweet, sweet woman, and well-trained and PhD and all that. She was one of the contributors to that documentary that I mentioned earlier. And we asked her the question because, you know, we were asking her from the perspective of parents. Like, Anna, you know, how do we fight this in a world where we just, on all sides, it's caving in, you know, like we just feel like all of this. And she said, you know, she recommended doing that sort of fast. And you talked about an hour in a restaurant or so. And she said, I dare you to put down your phone for 24 hours. And I said, well, what's the significance of 24 hours? And she said, well, it's not enough to sort of change the neural pathways, like the learned behavior that we have, because it is an addiction, right? We get a dopamine hit, you know, when we're seeing notifications on a phone or a text message or whatever, and our phones are fully designed to be that way. And she said, well, if you'll put it down for 24 hours, it is far enough. It's, you know, far long enough to elicit the symptoms of withdrawal and to, you know, to really show yourself that this could be a problem. And I then asked her the more pertinent question. I said, well, how long in your experience do you think it takes to sort of break that addiction, right? And kind of break the mind free. And she said, minimum 4 weeks. 4 weeks, Mike. Can you imagine that?
Oh my goodness.
Right?
Oh.
So some people think about the hour that you suggested in the restaurant. They're getting hives, they're getting twitches right now, just thinking of, you know, putting the phone down right now. And then you think of that day and then 4 weeks. And yeah, it's a big deal. And I don't know that she was necessarily going cold turkey, but you know, 4 weeks of a new habit, of a new sort of, methodology or sort of set of boundaries for how you're going to navigate tech, you know, that's how long it would take to sort of retrain and instill that habit. And we know that, you know, the school of thought is what, 21 days or 30 days or whatever to instill a new habit. So nothing crazy that she was saying there. But when she said 4 weeks, I said, oh my gosh, like how many could even do that? Right? How many could do that?
Well, and the bigger question is how many would want to do that?
Correct.
And that's going to be the question that we have to go. Now, our time is slipping away here. We did not get to solve all of the world problems the way I had hoped that we'd get to do, Jeff, but I'm going to have you back on because I've just enjoyed this way too much. I want to leave with a lyric of my favorite artist, and we'll talk about this in a few moments that we have left. Stephen Curtis Chapman has been my favorite music artist for years and years, and I had a chance a couple of years ago to meet him. Within the course of 3 months, I got to be with him twice, and oh my goodness, I love both times. But he had a song back in, I think it was in the 90s, it was called See the Glory, and I want you to listen and listen to these lyrics, and this is just exactly what you're talking about. He said, I'm playing the Game Boy. Now, there's a reference right there to technology past. I'm playing the Game Boy standing in the middle of the Grand Canyon. I'm eating candy sitting in a gourmet feast. I'm wading in a puddle when I could be swimming in the ocean. Tell me, what is the deal with me? I know the time has come for me to wake up and see the glory. Wow. What a powerful word from Mr. Stephen Curtis Chapman. So thank you for that. And even though the reference to Game Boy might be a few generations old there.
But I was going to say, is it wrong that I want to go hit eBay and try and find one? I'm getting a little nostalgic here.
Well, the song had all the cool sound effects from the Game Boy on it as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. I don't think I've heard that song. I need to go listen to that one. I've heard a lot of his, I love a lot of his music. I don't remember that song for some reason.
It's called
check it out.
See the Glory. Check it out. And it's really good. It speaks to what we're talking about. Jeff McLaughlin, thank you for being with me today on the program.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's always great to talk to somebody who has a heart, who has a love, who has a background of wanting to help people. And you do that by pointing them to the Lord, by pointing them to the Word of God. And that's what makes you such an interesting guest on this program, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so appreciative. Thank you. It's always great to talk to you. I love these kinds of conversations. And just that we solve the world's problems and nothing all at the same time and have a good time doing it, don't we, right?
All right. And friends, thank you for being with me here today on Afternoons with Mike. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.